Patch Reddy's looking for a big, long contract and a lot of money, he might not be able to get the term that he might be looking for. And Bergevin is looking for an appropriate return for a perennial 30-goal scorer, and he's probably not going to get that either.
Welcome back. Melnick in the afternoon, TSN 690. That was Arpan Basu of The Athletic. He is the managing director in Montreal of The Athletic with Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, Rick Moffitt this morning on TSN 690. Mitch Gallo is back from all the action in Dallas. Dave Trentadue is in for Rod Francis. And you know who's next.
Hockey insider Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub, with six locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
I am well, Mitch. Welcome back. And Mitch Gallo, welcome back.
Thanks, Pierre.
Where are you?
The southern tier. I'm on Route 17, almost to Corning, New York.
Okay, because these last few weeks, I get a little worried when I hear you on your cell phone in traffic.
No, this should be pretty good. It's a straight shot. If you ever played in the American Hockey League, it's the highway that you used to take from Rochester to Binghamton.
We may have taken that, actually.
I think we did. We went to a great smokehouse that John Bartlett took us to.
Yeah, what's it called? Oh, jeez.
And it was on that route, I'm pretty sure.
Dino's,
yeah.
Right, Pierre, you know that place?
Dino's is famous, yep.
Yeah, that's the one. Okay. We're going to get to the Hall of Fame. You have been part of the process for the first time. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. Very historic day today in the National Hockey League. But I know a lot of people want to hear your opinion, and forgive me if we repeat, you know, some of what you may have discussed yesterday. A lot of people were off yesterday. Just in your own mind today, everything that shook out in Dallas and the immediate aftermath of a trade that might have been completed had it been better terms for Max Pacioretty. How do you view this situation moving forward here between the Canadiens and Max Pacioretty?
Well, they're going to have to find a way to either move Max for less than what they thought, it's what I've been telling you for a while, or they're going to have to find a way to make a nice bet and get together again. That's what's going to have to happen. I mean, there's no other way to do it. I told you, they're demand, and it's nothing, they're not doing anything wrong. They put a value on the player, and I think they evaluated the player in terms of where he is marketplace-wise, and people just refused to pay that price. And so now they've got to decide what they're going to do. But I would say that to devalue the asset would be a mistake. But they're going to have to make nice and get back together again.
There appeared to have been a deal in place, but it wasn't to Max's liking with Los Angeles in terms of the term.
That part I'm aware of the rumors. I'm not aware of everything that went into it. I'm aware of rumors. I haven't heard it factually.
Right. But that's one of the reports out there. Certainly right. Bob McKenzie discussed it yesterday, and I know Tony followed up a little bit today that it was a term. Yeah. I mean, it is when you are watching, and I know you're focused on the draft, but when you're watching this kind of stuff develop and then all of a sudden Max fires his agent and hires Alan Walsh, and you know he wasn't happy about how it went down.
No, but again, I'm not privy to anything that went on. The agent that he let go of is a very high-profile agent. The agent that he hired has a tremendous working relationship in a lot of different cities, and also has created some problems in other cities, too, as you're well aware of, even though he's my friend. Alan Walsh is a very aggressive agent, very, very aggressive.
Well, there seems to be this feeling that because of the relationship between Pat Brisson and Marc Bergevin, longstanding friendship, that perhaps Pat Brisson was a little too cozy with Marc Bergevin on this particular matter, to Max Pacioretty's liking anyway.
Or maybe Pat Brisson's got a bigger guy that he's got to take care of right now, and that'd be John Tavares.
Well, I guess the other element of this, Pierre, what about the fact that Kovalchuk signs right after the Pacioretty thing didn't work out with the Kings? He signs with the Kings, and Kovalchuk is represented by the same group that Pacioretty just fired.
Well, that's possible, but here's one other thing to think about. That courtship started a while ago, so I don't think that was part and parcel with the Pacioretty situation. They were recruiting Kovalchuk a long time ago, where I think they made a mistake, quite frankly. It's great for the player. It's good for the agent. But where I think they made a big mistake is going to the third year. I don't know what he's going to have left in year three, and they paid a big dollar value to get that player. There was no other team prepared to give him a third year. No other team.
Pierre, try to follow the Tavares sweepstakes. I understand the presentation. It's a replay of what we saw with Stamkos and years before. Who was it in Toronto years ago?
Brad Richards.
Brad Richards, right. But what about this? Again, reports are that he's also going to be talking to some people via the phone. Does that make any sense to you?
It makes sense, but it's just to make sure he doesn't shrink the pool. He wants to have as many people involved in the negotiation as possible so that he'll be able to get the best deal possible for him and maybe explore some different options in terms of what people's visions are for their respective teams. But I would say if you're on the outside looking in and you're doing this over the phone rather than a face-to-face, I think it's a stretch that you're going to be in the running, seriously.
What about the idea, Pierre, that if he doesn't go back to the Islanders, he could only sign a 7-year deal so that you have a handshake agreement with one of these teams that they sign him to a contract of 1 year, $15.9 million, the max allowed, and then sign him to a 7-year deal next summer?
Yeah, that's what's been speculated around with a lot of different situations. I could see that, but you know what? John knows he's going to get his money. I really, truly believe that. John knows he's going to get his money. I think John just really desperately wants to win. And I think it's a lot like Steven Stamkos. There were other deals that were richer and sweeter than the one he got from Tampa, but he really felt Tampa gave him the best opportunity to win. And I think the same thing with Tavares. I think Johnny Tavares will pick the team that he thinks will have the best shot to win because the money's going to be almost the same. The one way it changes, the one way, is what Mitch Gallo just presented. You know, the one-year deal with the handshake agreement that it's going to be 7 years after, then you get to eight. But
kind of risky. Kind of risky.
That's very risky. Exactly right. Very risky.
And the thing about Stamkos, as you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning were much closer to legitimately competing for a cup when he returned to them than the Islanders are right now, which leads me to believe or leads me to speculate on the kind of conversations that he's had with Lou Lamoriello. Lamoriello's always had a goalie, right? He's always had a top-notch goalie. It starts there.
Yeah, absolutely it starts there. So who's...
Just like I...
Because Grubauer's gone, so who's he getting? Who's available? Who's giving away number one goalies? I think Cam Ward's going to end up in Chicago if you think he's a number one. So who's giving away number one goalies?
Well, if... What about Varlamov?
He's an injured player. That's one of the reasons why they went out and got Grubauer. So if you want to hit your wagon to that, that's fine. But remember, you have to pay a price to get that player. How deep are the Islanders? They had a very fortuitous draft. I will tell you that right now. They had a very, very good draft. Dobson's a really good defenseman. Wild, I think, is going to be a steal where they took him. Wahlstrom is as good a goal scorer, maybe as comparable as Zadina when it comes to scoring goals. So the Islanders' draft this summer was very fortuitous, and I say that because most people had Bodie Wild in the first round. He went in the second, mid-second. Most people had Dobson going in the top 10, and most people had Wahlstrom going in the top 10. So they got a real good amount of stuff out of their draft. But outside of that, they don't have a lot of depth in their organization.
Pierre, what would you be realistically looking for right now and over the next couple of weeks leading into training camp in late summer if you're the Canadiens and are intent on moving Max Pacioretty?
Well, I would desperately want to have a centerman, not a guy that I took this year as an 18-year-old that's still 17. I want a centerman, and I got to get one. You know, I know they're talking about Plekanec, and it sounds like he's going to come back. But does that really answer your problem?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
No, that's what I'm saying. So center ice position is still critically important, and I really hope that Shea Weber can come back and have a gigantic year, and Victor Mete can continue to evolve as a player, but and Noah Juulsen can as well. But, again, these are all you're seeing. The margins are so slight for this team compared to some of the teams they're competing against. They're not having this discussion in Philly. They're not having this discussion in Boston. They're not having this discussion in Tampa. They're not having this discussion in Washington now. They got Carlson. It looks like they're going to be able to keep Beagle. I mean, this is the problem. This is when you don't have a lot of depth, you're really hamstrung. You really, truly are.
What do you think when it shakes out, whether he actually signs with the Montreal Canadiens, returns to Winnipeg, or goes somewhere else, what do you think the final deal for Paul Stastny will look like?
Well, I was talking to an NHL decision maker this afternoon when I got into the car, and he was talking about how limited depth, how much limited depth there is at the center ice position. I said, yeah, but people aren't talking enough about Stastny. He goes, the problem is Stastny's going to be such a big price for the age that he's at because there is that limited depth at center. It's going to be interesting to see with Bozak and Stastny what kind of money both guys are going to get. That's going to be the problem. It's because now the market is so lean at that position, those guys are going to hit the mother load.
Pierre, what kind of dominoes do you expect to fall after Tavares signs his contract? Because, for instance, some have speculated that if he signs in Dallas, Tyler Seguin, who's in the final year of his contract, would be made available by the Stars. Some have speculated that if he were to go to Toronto, one of the two young guys, Marner or more likely Nylander, would be made available for a defenseman and trickle down from other teams as well of the five on the list of Tavares. How much do you think things could change as far as the landscape is concerned once Tavares signs with one of these teams?
It's a great question, and it's really well posed, Mitch. I don't know, but I would say the Dallas one doesn't sound great. I can't see them getting rid of Seguin. Part of the reason why you get Tavares is so you have the 1-2 punch of Seguin and Tavares. In Toronto, I could definitely see one of the young players move because of the fact that they desperately need a defenseman. They desperately need, because they're prepared to take the next step. So they desperately need a defenseman to take the next step. I don't know any other way to go about it except to say, I don't think he really affects the Dallas situation with Seguin at all.
Back to the Canadiens, we have, let's go to the blue line, and their never-ending search for a possible partner for Shea Weber, or certainly some depth on the left side. We have discussed Jack Johnson already. How about a couple of other guys who are younger, still in their 20s, and that would be Calvin DeHaan, who was injured from a good chunk of last year, and John Moore. What do you think of those guys?
I'm a big John Moore fan. I got asked a lot of questions about him when he was leaving the Rangers. The Devils signed him, and he did some really good things with the Devils. He's become too rich for their blood in terms of where he is on the depth chart. You can understand that. That's why Johnny's going to be moving on. Calvin DeHaan is somebody I really like a lot. He's from Carp, Ontario, right outside of Ottawa. He was a good Islander. He played junior with Tavares in Oshawa, so that was a tie in there. He's part of the same first round as Tavares when they were both drafted by the Islanders. I like Calvin. I just worry a little bit about his foot speed, but I think Calvin's a nice depth player. In terms of being a partner for Shea, I think that one probably doesn't work as well. Just don't see that being a fit.
And what about, I know this one not really relevant for the Canadiens since it's another left winger, but what do you think happens with Artemi Panarin?
Well, I had a long talk with John Davidson today before we got going. Actually, Michael Farber was there as well. We were talking about Panarin. He's the president of the Columbus Blue Jackets. And Panarin's obviously a young guy. He's got a little taste of St. Petersburg where he played before he came to Chicago where he played. And I think he's looking for more bright lights, big city. He's heavily involved with a young woman. I think she's been very successful in the modeling business. And so I think they're probably looking at an opportunity to maybe to go to a larger city than Columbus. And that's no shot or disrespect to Columbus at all. John has nothing but great things to say about Artemi Panarin. Nothing but great things to say about him.
With all of the, with so many of the players who are non-tendered over the weekend, under the age of 26 or 27, one name certainly leaps out when it comes to Montreal Canadiens fans who were wondering, because of the past association with Max Domi, if it would be worth taking a flyer on Anthony Duclair.
I think that's wait and see. I think there are other premiums. You know, he, Duclair, and Reinhardt were the best line for Canada 3 or 4 years ago at the World Junior in Toronto, where they won gold. That's the best hockey I've ever seen Max Domi play. He was phenomenal in that event. Duclair was great, and obviously Reinhardt was awesome as well. Probably one of the best lines I've seen Canada have in the last 15 years at the World Junior. They were that good. But I think there are other things that are a priority for Marc Bergevin before he tries to marry wingers. He's got to find legitimate centermen.
All right, and before we get to the Hockey Hall of Fame, a lot of now again, we stress that these are reports. There's nothing confirmed, but there seems to be an indication out there in social media land that there might be interest between the Montreal Canadiens and Slava Voynov. Can you see that in light of the emphasis that Marc Bergevin himself has put on character, that the Canadiens would go that route?
It depends on how you quantify character. This is really important. Slava Voynov is without a doubt, in my opinion anyways, the best defenseman outside of the National Hockey League. He was miles ahead of anybody else at the Olympics. Miles ahead. He is a top bona fide 1-2, more of a 2 than a 1 defenseman. He didn't have a real good situation with his wife. His wife has chosen to forgive him. They have not had any more situations like that. It depends on how you want to quantify character. I think this would be a tough sell. I mean that with all due respect to the player and to his family. I think it would be a tough sell for any organization to sign that player and bring him in. I think the fans, because of the era that we're in right now, I think people would have a very tough time digesting that.
Yeah, that's well said, Pierre, especially if you take the time, if those who haven't, to read the actual details of what went down that led to his arrest and banishment from the National Hockey League. We'll pick up on this, obviously, as things develop. Pierre, what was this like, participating in the Hockey Hall of Fame voting for the first time?
I had to pinch myself walking to the Hall of Fame this morning at 7 a.m. with our good friend Michael Farber. I couldn't believe it. Walked into the hall. We walked in a back door and sat down, and John Davidson showed up not long after, and all we did was talk hockey. And then, you know, I watched Igor Larionov walk in, I watched Bob Clark walk in, I watched Bob McKenzie walk in. It's just a laundry list of hockey luminaries, and I was just really honored that I had the privilege to sit in that room and actually make decisions and vote. It's a highly intense, highly professional, very thorough, and a very challenging experience. Everybody's entitled to an opinion in that room, and believe me, there are a lot of very strong, formal, hard-edged opinions. Guys challenge one another all the time. It's not for the faint of heart, but it's amazingly professional, it's very respectful, and it's something that I look forward to. You know, I've got two more years left on this term, and then it goes usually for 15. So hopefully I keep my health and stay on there for 15, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right. I know you can't say anything about the process, unfortunately. The same week that all the votes are finally made public for the balloting for the awards, it's a shame that secrecy remains here, but I respect that. Marty Brodeur, Martin St. Louis, Alexander Yakushev, Jenna Hefford. And here's what bothers me. Willie O'Ree is rightfully put into the builders category, but so is Gary Bettman at the same time. Why is it so important for the commissioner, while he's still the commissioner, to get into the Hall of Fame?
I don't know. He's been the commissioner for 25 years. He wasn't for 10 years, like John Ziegler, who was put in after 10 years. He's been the commissioner for 25 years. The hockey business has grown from $500 million a year when he took it over to over $4.5 billion. An expansion franchise when he took over the league was $50 million. Now it's going to be $650 million with Seattle. He's rescued the league time after time after time. If you look at some of the owners that he inherited that are no longer around, some of whom have actually gone to jail. What he's done as a commissioner over 25 years, and I'm just giving you a short little sample size of some of his accomplishments, has been phenomenal.
Pierre?
And look at the stability. Look at the stability of the ownership groups that are in the league today. That speaks resoundingly for some of his vision.
There's no doubt that Gary Bettman was going to go into the Hall of Fame at some point. I'm just curious about the decision to put him in the same year as Willie O'Ree and while he is still the commissioner. Even baseball waited for Bud Selig to stop.
No argument. Everything you're saying, I'm not arguing with you. But I'll give you another one of Gary Bettman's great accomplishments. Do you know who hired and had the vision to implement Willie O'Ree?
It was Gary Bettman.
Thank you.
Okay, but if you know, you can stand on that accomplishment without force-feeding people and reminding people that...
Gary Bettman didn't ask to be nominated. Gary Bettman didn't ask a room full of men to actually vote on his nomination. And I can tell you right now that it was an amazing presentation that was made by somebody that's on the committee that was really enlightening. It was really, really enlightening. And the competition level for the builders category, and this is about as deep as I want to go with it because I don't think I'm allowed to do more than that. The competition level for that position, the builder's position, was off the charts. It was amazingly competitive. I think this class should be celebrated for, how about Marty St. Louis, an undrafted player, a guy that wasn't even drafted into the Quebec Major Junior League or the National Hockey League. Look at what he accomplished. I made the point today, and I can just tell you this. What he accomplished to me is as great as anything we've seen. How about Marty Brodeur? How about the greatness of Marty Brodeur in celebrating the most wins ever by an NHL goalie? 3 Stanley Cups, 2 Olympic gold medals. How about Jayna Hefford? I don't know if I've ever seen a woman who scores goals like she has had the ability to do. I do think there will be another woman that will surpass her in Marie-Philippe Poulin, but until then, she's a dynamo. And Mitch, don't tell me you don't know about Yakushev. You and I grew up in the 72 Summit Series. Yakushev was off the charts. There were 8 games played. 4 of those 8, he was player of the game.
I'd love to focus on the names you just mentioned, but it's very difficult to do so when you've got Gary Bettman in the middle of it. Somebody had to know that putting Gary Bettman in is going to take away some of the long overdue acknowledgement of the greatness of some of these people. That's all. That's my point. I know. Yeah, I don't want to get you in trouble. I don't want to get you thrown out just as you start here, but it's going to be an issue. That's all.
I think this class should be celebrated. I really do. I mean, Willie O'Ree, are you kidding me? Willie O'Ree, what he's done in the last 20 years for inner city progress with hockey and in all parts of North America is phenomenal. And the greatness of the athletes that are entering, you know, is just tremendous. It's awesome. Anyways, I was in the room, and I can tell you the process is as professional as anything I've ever gone through. In fact, it's more professional than anything I've ever gone through.
Thanks an awful lot. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 5:05.
You got it, Mitch. Take care. Have a good night.
Also in the builder category, the Hockey Hall of Fame is pleased to welcome as an individual Willie O'Ree, the native of Fredericton, New Brunswick, split his hockey playing days between his home province and Quebec. From there, he went to Springfield and was called up to the Boston Bruins on January 18, 1958, making him the first black player in NHL history. After a long professional minor league career, O'Ree retired in 1979 at the age of 43. He has spent the last 20 seasons as an NHL ambassador, and in 2008 received the Order of Canada for his work growing the game of hockey around the world. Congratulations, Willie.